Not if it's interesting.
He was silent while he carefully measured a small amount of clear liquid from a glass-stoppered bottle.
From what I understand, the Lackless family has an heirloom. Well, not an heirloom exactly, but an ancient thing that dates back to the beginning of their line. There's not much odd with that. Old families are rife with heirlooms.
Hush! He said testily.
There's more to it than that.
He poured the liquid into a flat lead bowl with some crude symbols carved along the outside. It bubbled and hissed, filling the air with a faint, acrid smell. He decanted the liquid into the pan over the candles. From there, he added the dry leaf, a pinch of something, and a measure of white powder. He added a splash of fluid I assumed was simply water, stirred, and poured the result through a filter into a clear glass vial, stoppering it with a cork. He held the result up for me to see, a clear amber liquid with a slight greenish tint.
There you go. Remind him to drink it all.
I took the warm vial.
What was this heirloom?
Corticus rinsed his hands in a porcelain bowl and shook them dry.
I've heard that on the oldest parts of the Lackless lands, in the oldest part of their ancestral estate, there is a secret door. A door without a handle or hinges.
He watched me to make sure I was paying attention.
There's no way of opening it. It is locked, but at the same time, lockless. No one knows what's on the other side.
He nodded toward the vial in my hand.
Now get that for the mayor. It'll be best if he drinks it while it's warm.
He escorted me to the door.
Do come back tomorrow.
He smirked a bit.
I know a story about the Menebras that will turn your red hair white.
Oh, I only work on one family at a time, I said, not wanting to risk getting bogged down in endless court gossip. Two is the absolute most. Right now I'm working on Alvaron and Lackless. I couldn't bring myself to start a third as well. I gave an insipid smile. I'd put myself all in a muddle.
That's a shame, Corticus said. I travel quite a bit, you see. Many of the noble houses are eager to host the mayor's own arcanist.
He gave me a sly look.
This makes me privy to some rather interesting facts.
He opened the door.
Think on it, and do stop back tomorrow. I'll have more on the Lacklasses at any rate.
I was at the door of the mayor's rooms before the vial had a chance to cool. Stapes opened the door to my knocking and led me to the mayor's inner rooms. The mayor Alvaron was sleeping in the same position I had left him in. As Stapes shut the door behind me, one of the mayor's eyes opened and he beckoned to me feebly.
You took your sweet time.
Your Grace, I...
He motioned me forward again, more sharply this time.
Give me my medicine, he said thickly. Then leave. I'm tired.
I'm afraid it's rather important, Your Grace.
Both eyes opened, and the smoldering anger was there again.
What?
He snapped. I moved to the side of the bed and leaned close. Before he could protest my impropriety, I whispered,
Your Grace, Corticus is poisoning you.
Chapter 60. Wisdom's Tool.
The mayor's eyes went wide at my words, then narrowed again. Even in the midst of his infirmity, Alvaron's wit was sharp.
You were right to speak that close and soft,
he said.
You are treading dangerous ground. But speak. I will hear you.
Your Grace, I suspect Threp did not mention in his letter that I am a student at the university as well as a musician.
The mayor's eyes showed no glimmer of recognition.
Which university?
He asked.
The university, Your Grace,
I said. I'm a member of the Arcanum. Alvaron frowned.
You're far too young to make such a claim, and why would Threp neglect to mention this?
You are not looking for an Arcanist, Your Grace, and there is a certain stigma attached to that sort of study this far east.
It was the closest I could come to speaking the truth, that Vints are superstitious to the point of idiocy. The mayor blinked slowly, his expression hardening.
Very well, he said.
Perform some work of magic if you are what you say.
I am only an arcanist in training, Your Grace, but if you would like to see a bit of magic...
I looked at the three lamps lining the walls, licked my fingers, concentrated, and pinched the wick of the candle sitting on his bedside table. The room went dark, and I heard his startled intake of breath. I brought out my silver ring, and after a moment, it began to shine with a silver-blue light. My hands grew cold, as I had no source of heat other than my own body.
"That will do," the mayor said.
If he was at all unnerved, there was no hint of it in his voice. I stepped across the room and opened the shuttered windows. Sunlight flooded the room. There was a hint of celis flower, a trill of birdsong. I've always found that taking in some air is good for whatever troubles a body, though others disagree. I smiled at him. He didn't return it.
Yes, yes, you're very clever. Come here and sit.
I did so, taking a chair near his bedside.
Now explain yourself.
I told Codicus I was compiling a collection of stories from the noble houses, I said. A handy excuse, as it also explains why I've been spending time with you. The mayor's expression remained grim. I saw pain blur his eyes like a cloud passing in front of the sun.
Proof that you're a skilled liar hardly gained you my trust.
A cold knot began to form in my stomach. I had assumed the mayor would accept the truth more easily than this.
Just so, Your Grace, I lied to him, and I am telling you the truth. Since he thought me nothing more than an idle lordling, he let me watch while he made your medicine.
I held up the amber flask. The sunlight broke itself into rainbows on the glass. Elveron remained unmoved. His normally clear eyes fogged with confusion and pain.
I ask for proof and you tell me a story. Codicus has been a faithful servant for a dozen years. Nevertheless, I will consider what you've said.
His tone implied it would be a short, unkind consideration. He held out his hand for the vial. I felt a small flame of anger strike up inside me. It helped to ease the cold fear settling in my gut.
Your Grace wants proof? I want my medicine, he snapped, and I want to sleep. Please do, Your Grace, I can— How dare you interrupt me?
Elveron struggled to sit upright in his bed, his voice furious.
You go too far. Leave now, and I may still consider retaining your services.
He was trembling with rage, his hand still reaching for the vial. There was a moment of silence. I held out the vial, but before he could grasp it, I said, You have vomited recently. It was milky and white. The tension in the room rose sharply, but the mayor went motionless when he heard what I said. Your tongue feels thick and heavy. Your mouth is dry and filled with an odd, sharp taste. You have had a craving for sweets, for sugar. You wake in the night and find you cannot move, cannot speak. You are struck with palsy, with colic and unreasoning panic. As I spoke, the mayor's hand slowly drew away from the vial. His expression was no longer livid and angry. His eyes seemed unsure, almost frightened, but they were clear again, as if the fear had awakened some sleeping caution.
Codicus told you, the mayor said, but he sounded far from certain.
Would Codicus discuss the details of your illness with a stranger? I asked pointedly. My concern is for your life, Your Grace. If I must bruise propriety to save it, I will do so. Give me 2 minutes to speak, and I will give you proof.
Elveron gave a slow nod.
I'm not going to claim to know exactly what this is, I gestured with the vial. But most of what is poisoning you is lead. This accounts for the palsy, the pain in your muscles and viscera, the vomiting and paralysis.
I've had no paralysis.
I looked him over with a critical eye. That's fortunate, but... there is more than simply lead in this. I'm guessing this contains a goodly amount of ophalum, which isn't exactly poisonous.
What is it, then?
It's more of a medicine, or a drug.
Which is it, then? He snapped. Poison or medicine?
Has Your Grace ever taken laudanum? once, when I was younger, to help me sleep through the pain of a broken leg. Ophalum is a similar drug, but it is usually avoided as it is highly addictive. I paused. It is also called Denner resin. The mayor grew paler at this, and in that moment his eyes grew almost perfectly clear. Everyone knew about the sweet eaters. I suspect he added it because you had been irregular about taking your medicine, I said. The Ophalum would make you crave it while easing your pain at the same time. It would also account for your sugar craving, your sweets, and any odd dreams you've been having. What else did he put in here? I mused to myself. Probably stitch root or manum to keep you from vomiting too much. Clever. Horrible and clever. Not so clever. The mayor gave a rictus smile. He didn't manage to kill me. I hesitated, then decided to tell him the truth. Killing you would have been simple, Your Grace. He could easily dissolve enough lead in this vial to kill you. I held it up to the light. Getting enough to make you sick without killing or paralyzing you, that is difficult. Why? Why poison me if not to kill me? Your Grace would have better luck solving that riddle. You know more about the politics involved. Why poison me at all? The mayor sounded genuinely puzzled. I pay him lavishly. He is a member of the court in high regard. He has the freedom to pursue his own projects and travel when he wishes. He has lived here a dozen years. Why now? He shook his head. I tell you, it doesn't make sense. Money? I suggested. They say every man has a price. Mayor continued to shake his head. Then he looked up suddenly. No. I've just remembered. I fell ill long before Codicus began to treat me. He stopped to think. Yes, that's right. I approached him to see if he could treat my illness. The symptoms you mentioned didn't appear until months after he started treating me. It couldn't have been him. Lead works slowly in small doses, Your Grace. If he were going to poison you, he would hardly want you vomiting blood 10 minutes after you drank his medicine. I suddenly remembered who I was talking to. That was poorly said, Your Grace. I apologize. He nodded a stiff acceptance. Too much of what you say is too close to the mark for me to ignore. Yet still, I can't believe Codicus would do such a thing. We can put it to the test, Your Grace. He looked up at me. How is that? Order a half dozen birds brought to your rooms. Sipquix would be ideal. Sipquix? Tiny, bright things, yellow and red. I held up my fingers about 2 inches apart. They're thick in your gardens. They drink the nectar from your cellus flowers. Oh, we call them flits. We will mix your medicine with their nectar and see what happens. His expression grew bleak. If lead works slowly, as you say, this will take months. I'll not go without my medicine for months on some poorly supported fancy of yours. I saw his temper burning close to the surface of his voice. They weigh much less than you, Your Grace, and their metabolisms are much faster. We should see results within a day or two at most. I hoped. He seemed to consider this. Very well, he said, lifting a bell from his bedside table. I spoke quickly before he could ring it. Might I ask Your Grace to invent some reason for needing these birds? A little caution would serve us well. I have known Stapes forever, the mayor said firmly, his eyes as clear and sharp as I had ever seen them. I trust him with my lands, my lockbox, and my life. I do not ever wish to hear you imply he is anything other than perfectly trustworthy. There was unshakable belief in his voice. I dropped my eyes. Yes, Your Grace. He rang the bell, and it was barely 2 seconds before the portly manservant opened the door. Yes, sir? Stapes, I miss being able to walk in the gardens. Could you find me a half dozen flits? Flits, sir? Yes, the mayor said, as if he were ordering lunch. They're pretty things, I think the sound of them will help me sleep.
I'll see what I can do, sir. Before he closed the door, Stapes scowled at me. After the door was shut, I looked at the mayor.
Might I ask your grace why?
To save him the trouble of lying. He hasn't the knack for it. And there is wisdom in what you said. Caution is always wisdom's tool. I saw a thin layer of perspiration covering his face.
If I am correct, your grace, tonight will be difficult for you.
All my nights are difficult of late, he said bitterly. What will make this one any worse than the last?
The Ophalum, your grace. Your body is craving it. In 2 days, you should be through the worst of it, but until then you will be in considerable discomfort.
Speak plainly.
There will be aching in your jaw and head, sweating, nausea, cramps, and spasms, especially in your legs and lower back. You may lose control of your bowels, and there will be alternating periods of intense thirst and vomiting. I looked down at my hands.
I'm sorry, Your Grace.
Alvaron's expression was rather pinched by the end of my description, but he nodded graciously.
I would rather know.
There are a few things that will make it slightly more tolerable, Your Grace.
He brightened a bit. Such as?
Laudanum, for one. Just a bit to ease your body's craving. And a few other things. Their names are unimportant. I can mix them into a tea for you. Another problem is that you still have a goodly deal of lead in your body that isn't going to go away on its own. This seemed to alarm him more than anything I'd said so far.
Won't I simply pass it?
I shook my head. Metals are insidious poisons. They become trapped in your body. Only by special effort can we leach the lead away.
Mayor scowled. Damn and bother! I hate leeches.
A figure of speech, Your Grace. Only imbeciles and toad-eaters use leeches in this day and age. The lead needs to be drawn out of you. I thought about telling him the truth, that he would most likely never be rid of all of it, but decided to keep that bit of information to myself.
Can you do it?
I thought for a long moment. I am probably your best option, Your Grace. We are a long way from the university. I wager not 1 in 10 physicians here have any respectable training, and I don't know who among them might know Cauticus. I thought for a moment longer, then shook my head. I can think of 50 people better suited to the job, but they are 1,000 miles away.
I appreciate your honesty.
Most of what I need I can find down in Severin Low. However, I trailed off, hoping the mayor would understand my meaning and save me the embarrassment of asking for money. He stared at me blankly.
However?
I will need money, Your Grace. The things you will need are not easy to come by.
Oh, of course.
He produced a purse and passed it to me. I was a little surprised to find the mayor had at least one well-stocked purse within easy arm's reach of his bed. Unbidden, I remembered my tirade to a tailor in Tarbian years ago. What had I said to him? A gentleman is never far from his purse. I fought down an inappropriate fit of laughter. Stapes returned shortly after that. In a surprising display of resourcefulness, he produced 12 sipquicks in a wheeled cage the size of a wardrobe.
My word, Stapes, the mayor exclaimed as his manservant rolled the fine mesh cage through the doorway. You've outdone yourself.
Where would it suit you best, sir?
Just leave it there for now. I'll have Quoth move it for me.
Stapes looked a trifle wounded.
It's no trouble.
I know you'd be glad to do it, Stapes, but I was hoping you would fetch me a fresh pitcher of apple draw instead. I think it might settle my stomach.
Certainly.
He hurried out again, closing the door behind him. As soon as the door was closed, I moved to the cage. The little gem-like birds darted from perch to perch with a blurring speed.
Pretty things, I heard the mayor muse. I was fascinated with them as a child. I remember thinking how wonderful it must be to eat nothing but sugar all day.
There were 3 feeders wired to the outside of the cage, glass tubes filled with sugar water.
Two of them had spouts shaped like tiny cellus blooms, while the third was a stylized iris. The perfect pet for nobility. Who else could afford to feed their pet sugar every day? I unscrewed the tops of the feeders and poured a third of the mayor's medicine into each. I held out the empty vial to Alvaron. "What do you normally do with these?" He set it on the table near his bed. I watched the cage until I saw one of the birds fly to a feeder and drink. "If you tell Stapes you want to feed them yourself, will it keep him from meddling with their food?" "Yes. He always does exactly as I tell him." "Good. Let them drain the feeders before you refill them. They'll get a better dose that way, and we'll see results faster. Where do you want me to put the cage?" He looked around the room, his eyes moving sluggishly. "Next to the chest of drawers in the sitting room," he said finally. "I should be able to see the cage from here." I carefully rolled the cage into the next room. When I returned, I found Stapes pouring the mayor a glass of apple draw. I made a bow to Alvaron. "With your permission, Your Grace." He made a gesture of dismissal. "Stapes, Quoth will be returning later this afternoon. Let him in, even if I happen to be sleeping." Stapes nodded stiffly and gave me another disapproving look. "He may be bringing me a few things as well. Please don't mention it to anyone."
"If there is anything you require..."
Alvaron gave a tired smile. "I know you would, Stapes. I am simply putting the boy to use. I would rather have you close at hand." Alvaron patted his manservant's arm, and Stapes looked mollified. I let myself out. My trip to Severin Low took hours longer than it needed to. Though I chafed at the delay, it was a necessary one. As I walked the streets, I caught glimpses of folk dogging along behind me. I wasn't surprised. From what I had seen of the rumor-driven nature of the mayor's court, I expected to have a servant or two watching my errands in Severin Low. As I've said, the mayor's court was rather curious about me at this point, and you have no idea what lengths bored nobility will go in order to nose about in other people's business. While the rumors themselves were of no concern to me, their effects could be catastrophic. If Cauticus heard I had gone shopping through apothecaries after visiting the mayor, what steps would he take? Anyone willing to poison the mayor wouldn't hesitate to snuff me like a candle. So, to avoid suspicion, the first thing I did when I came to Severin was buy dinner. Good, hot stew and rough bread. I was sick to death of elegant food that was milk-warm by the time it made its way to my rooms. Afterward, I bought two tippling flasks, the sort normally used for brandy. Then, I spent a relaxing half-hour watching a small traveling troupe perform the end of The Ghost and the Goose Girl on a street corner. They weren't a Demaru, but they did a good job of it. The mayor's purse was generous to them when they passed the hat. Eventually, I found my way to a well-stocked apothecary. I bought several things in a nervous, haphazard manner. After I had everything I needed and a few things I didn't, I awkwardly made inquiries with the owner about what a man might take if he was having certain troubles in the bedroom. The chemist nodded seriously and recommended several things with a perfectly straight face. I bought a little of each, then made a bumbling attempt to threaten and bribe him into silence. By the time I finally left, he was insulted and thoroughly irritated. If anyone asked, he would be quick to tell the story of a rude gentleman interested in impotence cures. It was hardly something I was eager to add to my reputation, but at least there wouldn't be any stories making their way back to Cauticus about my purchasing laudanum, dead nettle, bite few, and other equally suspicious drugs. Lastly, I bought my loot back from the pawner with an entire day to spare. It nearly emptied the mayor's purse, but it was my final errand. The sun was setting by the time I made my way back to the foot of the shear. There were only a handful of options for making your way between Severin High and Severin Low. The most ordinary were the two narrow staircases that cut back and forth up the face of the shear. They were old, crumbling, and narrow in places, but they were free, and therefore the usual choice for the common folk who lived in Severin Low. For those who didn't relish the thought of climbing 200 feet of narrow stairway, there were other options. The freight lifts were run by a pair of former university students. Not full arcanists, but clever men who knew enough sympathy in engineering to manage the rather mundane task of hauling wagons and horses up and down the shear on a large wooden platform. For passengers, the freights cost a penny going up and a halfpenny going down, though you'd occasionally have to wait for some merchant to finish loading or unloading his goods before the lift could make its trip. Nobility didn't use the freights. The Vintic suspicion of all things remotely arcane took them to the horse lifts. These were drawn by a team of 20 horses hitched to a complex series of pulleys. This meant the horse lifts were a little faster and cost a full silver eighth bit to ride. Best of all, every month or so some drunk lordling would fall to his death from them, adding to their popularity by showing the breeding of the clientele. Since the money in my purse wasn't my own, I decided to use the horse lifts. I joined the four gentlemen and one lady who were already in line, waited for the lift to lower itself, then handed over my thin silver bit and stepped aboard. It was no more than an open-sided box with a brass rail running around the edge. Thick hempen ropes connected to the corners, giving it some stability, but any extreme motion set the thing swaying in a most disturbing fashion. A smartly dressed boy rode up and down with each load of passengers, opening the gate and signaling the horse drivers at the top when to begin their pull. It is the custom of the nobility to put their backs to Severin as they ride the lifts. Gawking was something common folk did. Not particularly caring what the nobles thought of me, I stood at the front rail. My stomach did peculiar things as we rose from the ground. I watched Severin spread out below. It was an old city, and proud. The high stone wall circling it spoke of troubled times long past. It said much of the mayor that even in these peaceful times the fortifications were kept in excellent repair. All three of the gates were guarded, and they were closed at sundown every night. As the lift continued, I could see the different sections of Severin as clearly as if I were looking down on a map. There was a rich neighborhood, spaced with gardens and parks, the buildings all of brick and old stone. There was the poor quarter, the streets narrow and twisting, where all the roofs were tar and wooden shingles. At the foot of the cliff, a black scar marked where a fire had cut through the city at some point in the past, leaving little more than the charred bones of buildings. Too soon, the ride was over. I let the other gentles disembark as I leaned against the railing, looking out over the city far below.
"Sir?"
the boy who rode the lift prompted wearily.
"All off."
I turned, stepped off the lift, and saw Denna standing in the front of the line. Before I had time to do anything other than stare in wonder, she turned and met my eyes. Her face lit. She cried my name, ran at me, and was nestled in my arms before I knew what was happening. I settled my arms around her and rested my cheek against her ear. We came together easily, as if we were dancers, as if we'd practiced it 1,000 times. She was warm and soft.
"What are you doing here?" she asked.
Her heart was racing, and I felt it thrilling against my chest. I stood mutely as she stepped back from me. Only then did I notice an old bruise fading to yellow high on her cheek. Even so, she was the most beautiful thing I had seen in 2 months and 1,000 miles.
"What are you doing here?" I asked.
She laughed her silver laugh and reached out to touch my arm. Then her eyes flicked over my shoulder and her face fell.
"Hold on!"
she cried to the boy who was closing the gate to the lift.
"I have to catch this one or I'll be late," she said,
her face full of pained apology as she stepped past me onto the lift.
"Come find me!"
The boy closed the gate behind her, and my heart fell as the lift began to drop from sight.
"Where should I look?"
I stepped closer to the edge of the shear, watching her fall away. She was looking up, her face white against the darkness, her hair a shadow in the night.
"The second street north of Main, Tinnery Street."
Shadow took her, and suddenly I was alone. I stood, the smell of her still in the air around me, the warmth of her just fading from my hands. I could still feel the tremor of her heart, like a caged bird beating against my chest. Chapter 61. Dead Nettle. After my trip to Severin, I deposited my loot case in my room and made my way to Alvaron's private rooms as quickly as possible. Stapes was not pleased to see me, but he showed me in with the same bustling efficiency as always. Alvaron lay in a sweaty stupor, his bedclothes twisted around him. It was only then I noticed how thin he had grown. His arms and legs were stringy, and his complexion had faded from pale to gray. He glowered at me as I entered the room. Stapes arranged the mayor's covers in a more modest fashion and helped him into a seated position, propping him up with pillows. The mayor endured these ministrations stoically, then said, "Thank you, Stapes," in a tone of dismissal. The manservant left slowly, giving me a decidedly uncivil stare. I approached the mayor's bed and brought several items from the pockets of my cloak. "I found everything I needed, Your Grace, though not everything I hoped for. How do you feel?" He gave me a look that spoke volumes. "It took you a damn long time getting back. Corcus came while you were away." I fought down a wave of anxiety. "What happened?" He asked me how I was feeling, and I told him the truth. He looked in my eyes and down my throat and asked me if I'd thrown up. I told him yes, and that I wanted more medicine and to be left alone. He left and sent some over. I felt a panic rise in me. "Did you drink it? If you'd been gone much longer, I would have, and to hell with your fairy stories." He brought another vial from beneath his pillow. "I can't see what harm it could do. I can feel myself dying already." He thrust it toward me angrily. "I should be able to improve matters, Your Grace. Remember, tonight will be the most difficult. Tomorrow will be bad. After that, all should be well." "If I live so long as that," he groused. It was just the petulant grumble of a sick man, but it mirrored my thoughts so precisely that ice ran down my back. Earlier, I hadn't considered that the mayor might die despite my intervention, but when I looked at him now, frail and gray and trembling, I realized the truth. He might not live through the night. "First, there's this, Your Grace." I took out the tippling flask. "Brandy?" he said with muted anticipation. I shook my head and opened it. He wrinkled his nose at the smell and sank back onto the pillows. "God's teeth! As if my dying wasn't bad enough! Cod liver oil?" I nodded seriously. "Take two good swallows, Your Grace. This is part of your cure." He made no move to take it. "I've never been able to stomach the stuff, and lately I even vomit up my tea. I won't put myself through the hell of drinking it only to sick it back up." I nodded and restoppered the flask. "I'll give you something to stop that." There was a pot of water on the bedside table, and I began to mix him a cup of tea. He craned weakly to see what I was doing. "What are you putting in that?" "Something to keep you from being sick, and something to help you pass the poison out of your system. A bit of laudanum to ease your craving, and tea. Does Your Grace take sugar?" "Normally, no. But I'm guessing it will taste like stump water without it." I added a spoonful, stirred, and handed him the cup. "You first," Alvaron said. Pale and grim, he watched me with his sharp gray eyes. He smiled a terrible smile. I hesitated, but only for a moment. "To Your Grace's health," I said, and took a good swallow. I grimaced and added another spoonful of sugar. "Your Grace predicted it quite well. Stump water it is." He took the cup with both hands and began to drink it in a number of quick, determined sips. "Dreadful," he said simply, "but better than nothing. Do you know what a hell it is to be thirsty but not be able to drink for fear of throwing up? I wouldn't wish it on a dog." "Wait a bit to finish it," I cautioned. "That should settle your stomach in a few minutes." I went into the other room and added the new vial of medicine to the Flitz feeders. I was relieved to see they were still sipping at the medicated nectar. I had worried they might avoid it due to a change in flavor or some natural instinct for self-preservation. I also worried that lead might not be poisonous to Sipquicks. I worried they might take a span to show any ill effects, not mere days. I worried at the mayor's rising temper. I worried at his illness. I worried at the possibility I might be wrong about everything I'd guessed. I returned to the mayor's bedside and found him cradling the empty cup in his lap. I mixed a second cup similar to the first, and he drank it quickly. Then we sat in silence for the space of 15 minutes or so.
How do you feel, Your Grace?
Better, he admitted grudgingly. I detected a slight dullness to his speech.
Much better.
That is probably the laudanum, I commented, but your stomach should be settled by now. I picked up the flask of cod liver oil. 2 good swallows, Your Grace.
Is this really the only thing that will do?
He asked distastefully. If I had access to the apothecaries near the university, I could find something more palatable, but at the moment, this is the only thing that can be done.
Get me another cup of tea to wash it down with.
He picked up the flask, took 2 sips, and handed it back, his mouth turned down in a ghastly expression. I sighed internally.
If you're going to sip it, we'll be here all evening. 2 solid swallows, the kind sailors use to drink cheap whiskey.
He scowled.
Don't speak to me as if I were a child.
Then act the part of a man, I said harshly, stunning him to silence. 2 swallows every 4 hours. That whole flask should be finished by tomorrow.
His gray eyes narrowed dangerously. I would remind you who you are speaking to.
I am speaking to a sick man who will not take his medicine, I said levelly. Anger smoldered behind his laudanum-dulled eyes. A pint of fish oil is not medicine, he hissed. It is a malicious and unreasonable request. It can't be done. I fixed him with my best withering stare and took the flask out of his hand. Without looking away, I drank the whole thing down. Swallow after swallow of the oil passed my gullet as I held the mayor's eye. I watched his face shift from angry to disgusted, then finally settle into an expression of muted, sickened awe. I upended the flask, ran my finger around the inside of it, and licked it clean. I pulled out a second flask from a pocket of my cloak. This was going to be your dose for tomorrow, but you will need to use it tonight. If you find it easier, 1 swallow every 2 hours should suffice. I held it out to him, still holding his eyes with mine. He took it mutely, drank 2 good swallows, and stoppered the flask with a grim determination. Pride is always a better lever against the nobility than reason. I fished in one of the pockets of my rich burgundy cloak and brought out the mayor's ring. I forgot to return this to you before, Your Grace. I held it out to him. He began to reach out for it, then stopped.
Keep it for now, he said. You've earned that much, I imagine.
Thank you, Your Grace, I said, careful to keep my expression composed. He wasn't inviting me to wear the ring, but allowing me to keep it was a tangible step forward in our relationship. No matter how his courtship of the Lady Lackless went, I had made an impression on him today. I poured him more tea and decided to finish his instructions while I had his attention. You should drink the rest of this potful tonight, Your Grace, but remember, it's all you'll have until tomorrow. When you send for me, I'll brew you some more. You should try to drink as many fluids as you can tonight. Milk would be best. Put some honey in it and it will go down easier. He agreed and seemed to be easing towards sleep. Knowing how difficult his night would be, I let him nod off. I gathered my things before letting myself out. Stapes was waiting in the outer rooms. I mentioned to him that the mayor was sleeping and told him not to toss out the tea in the pot, as His Grace would be wanting it when he woke up. As I left, the look Stapes gave me was not merely chilly as it had been before. It was hateful, practically venomous. Only after he closed the door behind me did I realize what this must look like to him. He assumed I was taking advantage of the mayor in his time of weakness. There are a great many such people in the world, traveling physicians with no qualms about preying on the fears of the desperately ill. The best example of this is Dead Nettle, the potion seller in Three Pennies for Wishing. Easily one of the most despised characters in all drama, there's no audience that doesn't cheer when Dead Nettle gets pilloried in the fourth act. With that in mind, I began to dwell on how fragile and gray the mayor had looked. Living in Tarbian, I had seen healthy young men killed by Ophalum withdrawal, and the mayor was neither young nor healthy. If he did die, who would be blamed? Certainly not Cauticus, trusted advisor. Certainly not Stapes, beloved manservant. Me. They would blame me. His condition had worsened soon after I arrived. I didn't doubt Stapes would quickly bring to light the fact that I'd been spending time alone with the mayor in his rooms, that I'd brewed him a pot of tea right before he had a very traumatic night. At best, I would look like a young Dead Nettle. At worst, an assassin. Such was the turning of my thoughts as I made my way through the mayor's estate back to my rooms, pausing only to lean out one of the windows overlooking Severin Low and vomit up a pint of cod liver oil. Chapter 62. Crisis. The next morning I made my way to Severin Low before the sun was up. I ate a hot breakfast of eggs and potatoes while I waited for an apothecary to open. When I was finished, I bought two more pints of cod liver oil and a few other oddments I hadn't thought of the day before. Then I walked the entire length of Tinnery Street, hoping to stumble onto Denna despite the fact that it was far too early in the morning for her to be up and about. Wagons and farmers' carts vied for space on the cobbled streets. Ambitious beggars were laying claim to the busiest corners while shopkeepers hung out their shingles and threw wide their shutters. I counted 23 inns and boarding houses on Tinnery Street. After making note of the ones Denna would probably find appealing, I forced myself back to the mayor's estates. This time, I took the freight lifts, partly to confuse anyone following me, but also because the purse the mayor had given me was nearly empty. Since I needed to keep a normal face on things, I remained in my rooms, waiting for the mayor to send for me. I sent my card and ring to Braden, and soon he was sitting across from me, thrashing me at tack and telling stories.
So the mayor had him hung in a gibbet, right alongside the eastern gate, hung here for days, howling and cursing, saying he was innocent, saying it wasn't right and how he wanted a trial.
I couldn't quite bring myself to believe it.
A gibbet?
Braden nodded seriously.
An actual iron gibbet. Who knows where he managed to find one in this day and age? It was like something out of a play.
I searched for something relatively noncommittal to say. While it did sound grotesque, I also knew better than to openly criticize the mayor.
Well, I said, banditry is a terrible thing.
Braden began to place a stone on the board, then reconsidered.
Quite a few folks thought the whole thing was in rather...
He cleared his throat.
Bad taste. But nobody said so very loudly, if you catch my meaning. It was a grisly thing, but it got the point across.
He finally chose the placement of his stone, and we played quietly for a time. It's a strange thing, I said. I ran into someone the other day who didn't know where Cauticus would rank in the overall scheme of things.
That's not terribly surprising.
Braden gestured to the board.
The giving and receiving of rings is a lot like tack. On the face of it, the rules are simple. In execution, they become quite complicated.
He clicked down a stone, his dark eyes crinkling with amusement.
In fact, the other day I was explaining the intricacies of the custom to a foreigner not familiar with such things.
That was kind of you, I said. Braden gave a gracious nod.
It seems simple at first glance, he said. A baron ranks above a baronet, but sometimes young money is worth more than old blood. Sometimes control of a river is more important than how many soldiers you can put to field. Sometimes a person is actually more than one person, technically speaking. The Earl of Svanis is, by strange inheritance, also the Viscount of Teven. One man, but two different political entities. I smiled. My mother once told me she knew a man who owed fealty to himself, I said. Owed himself a share of his own taxes every year, and if he were ever threatened, there were treaties in place demanding he provide himself with prompt and loyal military support. Braden nodded.
It happens more often than folk realize, he said. Especially with the older families. Stapes, for example, exists in several separate capacities.
Stapes? I asked. But he's just a manservant, isn't he?
Well, Braden said slowly, he is that. But he's hardly just a manservant. His family is quite old, but he has no title of his own. Technically, he ranks no higher than a cook, but he owns substantial lands. He has money, and he is the mayor's manservant. They've known each other since they were boys. Everyone knows he has Alvaron's ear.
Braden's dark eyes peered at me.
Who would dare insult such a man with an iron ring? Go to his room, and you will see the truth. There is nothing in his bowl but gold.
Braden excused himself shortly after our game, claiming a prior engagement. Luckily, I now had my lute to occupy my time. I set about retuning it, checking the frets, and fussing over the tuning peg that was constantly coming loose. We had been away from each other for a long while, and it takes time to get reacquainted. Hours passed. I discovered myself absent-mindedly playing Dead Nettle's Lament, and forced myself to stop. Noon came and went. Lunch was delivered and cleared away. I retuned my lute and ran some scales. Before I knew it, I found myself playing Leave the Town Tinker. Only then did I realize what my hands were trying to tell me. If the mayor was still alive, he would have called for me by now. I let the lute fall silent and began to think very quickly. I needed to leave. Now. Stapes had seen me bringing medicine to the mayor. I could even be accused of tampering with the vial I had brought from Cauticus's rooms. Slow fear began to knot my gut as I realized the helplessness of my situation. I didn't know the mayor's estates well enough to attempt a clever escape. On my way to Severin Low this morning, I'd gotten turned around and had to stop to ask directions. The knock on the door was louder than usual, more forceful than that of the errand boy who normally came to deliver the mayor's invitation. Guards. I froze in my seat. Would it be best to answer the door and tell the truth? Or duck out the window into the garden and somehow try to make a run for it? The knock came again, louder.
Sir? Sir?
The voice was muffled by the door, but it was not a guard's voice. I opened the door and saw a young boy carrying a tray with the mayor's iron ring and card. I picked them up. The card had a single word written in a shaky hand. Immediately. Stapes looked uncharacteristically ragged around the edges and greeted me with an icy stare. Yesterday, he'd looked as if he wanted me dead and buried. Today, his look implied that simply buried would be good enough. The mayor's bedroom was generously decorated with Celis flowers. Their delicate smell was almost enough to cover the odors they'd been brought in to conceal. Combined with Stape's appearance, I knew my predictions of the night's unpleasantness had been close to the truth. Alvaron was propped into a sitting position in his bed. He looked as well as could be expected, which is to say, exhausted, but no longer sweating and racked with pain. As a matter of fact, he looked almost angelic. A rectangle of sunlight washed over him, lending his skin a frail translucency and making his disarrayed hair shine like a silver crown around his head. As I stepped closer, he opened his eyes, breaking the beatific illusion. No angel ever had eyes as clever as Alvaron's. "I trust I find your grace well," I asked politely. passing fair, he responded, but it was mere social noise, telling me nothing. How do you feel? I asked in a more serious tone. He gave me a long look that let me know he did not approve of my addressing him so casually, then said, Old. I feel old and weak. He took a deep breath. But for all that, I feel better than I have in several days. A little pain, and I'm mightily tired. But I feel clean. I think I've passed the crisis. I did not ask about last night. Would you like me to mix you another pot of tea? Please. His tone was measured and polite. Unable to guess his mood, I hurried through the preparations and handed him his cup. He looked up at me after sampling it. This tastes different. There is less laudanum in it, I explained. Too much would be harmful to your grace. Your body would begin to depend on it as surely as it craved the ophalum. He nodded. You'll note my birds are doing well, he said in an overly casual tone. I looked through the doorway and saw the sipquicks darting about in their gilded cage, lively as ever. I felt a chill at the implication of his comment. He still didn't believe Cauticus was poisoning him. I was too stunned to make a quick reply, but after a breath or two I managed to say, Their health does not concern me nearly so much as your own. You do feel better, don't you, Your Grace? That is the nature of my illness. It comes and goes. The mayor set down his cup of tea, still three-quarters full. Eventually it fades entirely, and Cauticus is free to go off gallivanting for months at a time, gathering ingredients for his charms and potives. Speaking of, he said, folding his hands in his lap, would you do me the favor of fetching my medicine from Cauticus? Certainly, Your Grace. I stretched a smile over my face, trying to ignore the unease settling in my chest. I cleaned up the clutter I had created while fixing his tea, tucking packages and bundles of herbs back into the pockets of my burgundy cloak. The mayor nodded graciously, then closed his eyes and seemed to lapse back into his tranquil, sunlit nap.
"Our fledgling historian!" Cauticus said as he gestured me inside and offered me a seat. "If you'll excuse me for a moment, I'll be right back."
I sank into the padded chair and only then noticed the array of rings on the nearby table. Cauticus had gone so far as to have a rack built for them. Each was displayed with the name facing outward. There were a great many of them, silver, iron, and gold. Both my gold ring and Alvaron's iron one sat on a small tray on the table. I reclaimed them, taking note of this rather graceful way of wordlessly offering the return of a ring. I looked around the large tower room with muted curiosity. What possible motive could he have for poisoning the mayor? Barring access to the university itself, this place was every arcanist's dream. Curious, I got to my feet and wandered to his bookshelves. Cauticus had a respectable library with nearly 100 books crowding for space. I recognized many of the titles. Some were chemical references. Some were alchemical. Others dealt with the natural sciences, herbology, physiology, bestiology. The vast majority seemed to be historical in nature. A thought occurred to me. Perhaps I could get the native vintage superstition to work to my advantage. If Cauticus was a serious scholar and even half as superstitious as a native vint, he might know something about the Chandrian. Best of all, since I was playing the dim-witted lordling, I didn't need to worry about damaging my reputation. Cauticus came around the corner and seemed somewhat taken aback when he saw me standing by the bookshelves, but he rallied quickly and gave me a polite smile. "See anything you're interested in?" I turned, shaking my head. "Not particularly," I said. "Do you know anything about the Chandrian?" Cauticus looked at me blankly for a moment, then burst out laughing. "I know they're not going to come into your room at night and steal you out of your bed," he said, wiggling his fingers at me the way you'd tease a child. "You don't study mythology, then?" I asked, fighting down a wave of disappointment at his reaction. I tried to console myself with the fact that this would firmly solidify me as a half-wit lordling in his mind. Corticus sniffed. "That's hardly mythology," he said dismissively. "One could barely even stoop to calling it folklore. It's superstitious bunk, and I don't waste my time with it. No serious scholar would." He began to putter around the room, restoppering bottles and tucking them into cabinets, straightening up stacks of papers, and returning books to their shelves. "Speaking of serious scholarship, if I remember correctly, you were curious about the Lackless family?" I simply stared at him for a moment. With everything that had happened since, I'd all but forgotten the pretense of the anecdotal genealogy I'd invented yesterday. "If it wouldn't be any trouble," I said quickly. "As I've said, I know practically nothing of them." Corticus nodded seriously. "In that case, you might be well served in considering their name." He adjusted an alcohol lamp underneath a simmering glass alembic in the midst of an impressive array of copper tubing. Whatever he was distilling, I guessed it wasn't peach brandy. "You see, names can tell you a great deal about a thing." I grinned at that, then fought to smother the expression. "You don't say." He turned back to face me just as I got my mouth under control. "Oh, yes," he said. "You see, names are sometimes based on other, older names. The older the name, the closer it lies to the truth. Lackless is a relatively new name for the family, not much more than 600 years old." For once, I didn't have to feign amazement. 600 years is new? The Lackless family is old." He stopped his pacing and settled down into a threadbare armchair. "Much older than the House of Alvaron. 1,000 years ago, the Lackless family enjoyed a power at least as great as Alvaron's. Pieces of what are now Vintus, Modeg, and a large portion of the small kingdoms were all Lackless lands at one point." "What was their name before that?" I asked. He pulled down a thick book and flipped its pages impatiently. "Here it is. The family was called Leoklos, or Loklos, or Leolos. They all translate the same. Lockless. Spelling was rather less important in those days." "What days are those?" I asked. He consulted the book again. "About 900 years ago, but I've seen other histories that mention the Leoklos 1,000 years before the fall of Atur." I boggled at the thought of a family older than empires. So the Lockless family became the Lackless family. What reason could a family have for changing its name? "There are historians who would cut off their own right hands to answer that," Corticus said. "It's generally accepted that there was some sort of falling out that splintered the family. Each piece took on a separate name. In Atur, they became the Lackkey family. They were numerous, but fell on hard times. That's where the word lackey comes from, you know. All those paupered nobility forced to scrape and bow to make ends meet. In the south, they became the Lackliffs, who slowly spiraled into obscurity. The same with the Cape Sayan in Modeg. The largest piece of the family was here in Vintus, except Vintus didn't exist back then." He closed the book and held it out to me. "You can borrow this if you like." "Thank you." I took the book. "You're too kind." There was the distant sound of a belling tower. "I'm too long-winded," he said. "I've talked away our time and haven't given you anything of use." "Just the history makes a great difference," I said gratefully. "Are you sure I can't interest you in a few stories from other families?" he asked, walking over to a work table. "I wintered with the Jackis family not long ago. The Baron is a widower, you know, quite wealthy and somewhat eccentric." He raised both eyebrows at me, his eyes wide with implied scandal. "I'm sure I could remember a few interesting things if I were assured of my anonymity." I was tempted to break character for that, but instead I shook my head. Perhaps when I'm done working on the Lackless section, I said with all the self-